I heard about a shooting involving a 3-year-old girl over the summer. My daughter Riley is that age.
There was a point when I felt that I was going to die.
My parents used to always say a bullet doesn't have a name on it.
Someone put a bullet in the back of my 14-year-old son's head.
The gun should never be an option.
We're Americans. We don't have to live like this.
We can all make a difference.
In the United States, 88 people die of gun violence every day.
We can end gun violence.
Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Christian Bond. I'm POU's half-athlete. I'm joined by Kellen Westering of POU Football, Lacey Nicholson of POU Women's Basketball, and Drew Artisoni of POU Men's Basketball. If you want to call into the show and talk a little sports with us, you can do so at 253-535-7332. Once again, that phone number is 253-535-7332. So let's talk a little bit about
great song choice, Christian.
I know. I'm getting motivated to do something after this radio show.
Motivated to run?
Probably not. I was scrolling through my Twitter the other day, and a tweet stuck out to me. Jamal Crawford of the Los Angeles Clippers tweeted, "Good win." Just a simple two-word tweet. It made me think, you know, is there such thing as a bad win? Because personally, I've never won anything in my life and thought, wow, that was really bad that I did that. Like, I shouldn't have won that.
Good point.
So, that one kind of bothers me. I don't understand it. I think probably all wins are good. Not probably. They all. All wins are good, in my book. Do athletes tweet anything that bother you?
Well, let me help break this down for you here, Christian.
Okay. Let the teach the half-athlete now what a good win and a bad win is, because bad wins aren't real.
You never heard the saying, you don't, there's a reason they count them and don't grade them? Have you ever heard that saying before?
Not until now.
Yeah, you count them, you don't grade them. You count the wins, you don't grade the wins.
Kellen, break it down for me.
Yeah, let me break this down for you real quickly here. So, there is no such thing as a bad win, in my opinion. I hope we would all agree with that as athletes. If you win a game, you win a game, no matter how it happens. Yes, there's games where you win and you're frustrated because you didn't win by enough. But here's the thing. If we would have beaten Whitworth this year, if we would have beaten Linfield this year, that's a great win. I would have maybe tweeted that. Great win by our guys, or posted on Instagram. This was a heck of a win.
But why?
Because they were both ranked in the top 25 in the country at that time, and it could have gone either way. I think if you look on paper, Linfield, you put us into a computer, you put them in the computer, they beat us 10 out of 10 times. With us and Whitworth, I think we're a little bit more similar physically, so it was more of an even game. But after we had just beaten Lewis and Clark, or after we had beaten, you know, UPS, no offense to them, they got a great program, it's not necessarily a great win. Now, do I look at that UPS game as a great win? I think it was, because we had just come back, down by 10 with 5 minutes left. But a team like Lewis and Clark, you know, we should beat them. No offense to them, but on paper, we should beat them. So I don't necessarily think there's a thing as a bad win, but I definitely think there's times like Alabama had beaten a team that's not very good this year, and Nick Saban was livid on the sidelines. And in my opinion, that's not a bad win, but they didn't give it their best shot. They kind of played down to their opponent, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I think a good win is when you're playing together as a team, you're fundamental, you're flowing, and I think you can definitely win games without running that system. So for me, a good win is when things feel good on the court and everyone's on the same page. And we pull out a win.
That's fair. That's fair. Drew, good win. Do athletes tweet anything that bother you?
Do athletes tweet anything that bother me?
Yes.
No. I mean, I think some athletes can be a little too active on social media. Mm-hmm. But speaking of social media, it'd be almost irresponsible to not mention the fact that Kate Upton pretty much broke Twitter last night.
Yes, that was
Kate Upton.
She is the fiance of Justin Verlander,
who received the most first place votes out of anybody for the Cy Young Award and lost.
And what was her tweet?
I can't use the language on the air, but it was, in terms of being a sports fan and like how she came out with that, was pretty bold. I'm very, very impressed with Kate Upton. I've been pretty hard on Russell Wilson in the late weeks for being too active on social media, and I think which showed a realignment in his priorities. I was called out a little bit on Twitter this weekend by my producer for being very hard on Russell Wilson. I think he can be a little too active on social media sometimes.
But can I say something real quick?
Yeah.
I think Russell Wilson is active in the right way. Seattle Children's Hospital, he's not posting shoes.
In his career, I'd agree with you. I'd agree with you early in his career. I'd agree with you.
Okay.
Completely. But I think as of late, it's changed. I think he's become active on social media, and it's more promotional stuff, and him and his wife, and he's got a kid on the way. Understandably, his priorities have changed. I get it. That's completely fine. However, it's just things like Jamal Crawford is a pro's pro, and he would tweet things like good win. That's something you expect Tim Duncan to tweet.
Yeah.
But then there's guys like my personal favorite, like Conor McGregor, who are famous for one-word tweets of profanity and lots of smack talk and other things where I'm like, dude, we know you're the greatest. Like, it's very evident. But, I mean, just take care of your business in the ring. Get off social media.
So that kind of leads me into my next question. So many of athletes' answers to reporters are just cookie cutter. I've been told to say this, so I'm going to say this. And here's what I have to say. I want to ask, as athletes and as future journalists, do you have a problem with so many athletes being just cookie cutter? I want to thank my team. My coach has had a great game plan, blah, 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 blah. Or should people be more genuine with what they have to say right after a football game or a basketball game or a baseball game? Lacey?
Well, for us as college athletes, I know we don't have a training on what we say to the media, but before every season, our coach brings it up and says you have to be respectful to that person, as well as say positive things about your team and your opponents. And I think that's just protecting the reputation of your program, and you are allowed the ability to wear this program on your jersey, Pacific Lutheran University, and you have to represent that well. When you get to the professional level, it might be a little different. I mean, you hear guys saying what they want to say, but in my opinion, when I hear professional athletes talking smack about other athletes or their own teammates even, I have a hard time respecting that. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Kellen, Drew, what do you think?
So there's a couple different instances. Like, I think when Dak Prescott comes to the podium and he says the things he says, it sounds like he's been coached to say those things. But if you know anything about the kid's backstory and like what he's come from, you understand that that's who the kid really is. Now you go to Andrew Luck in Indianapolis, who comes to the thing and blames everything on himself. He's just not being real. Like, the problems in Indianapolis have nothing to do with probably the best quarterback of this new era. And so I feel like that's kind of fake and cookie cutter. I feel like Dak's more real with it. I feel like, and that's kind of like where I kind of draw the line in terms of like professional football right now. I always feel like when guys come out after like a scandal or whatever, their statements are always very prepared and very easy. And I think that's where Conor McGregor can sometimes be refreshing, is that he walked into that Vegas press conference in front of every media member in the world, in the free world, and said, "I'm late and I just don't give a you know what."
Mm-hmm.
And he's just so real and so
raw. That's what you say at class, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's just so real and so raw that I think it's just so healthy for the media anyways. I think anytime you interview a guy like that, you're going to get just raw, real responses.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my point. Like, we can see what the problems are with teams. Like, we understand where they're flawed. And then when, like you said, Andrew Luck comes out and blames himself, you know it's not real, and it bugs me. Like, just tell me, you know, I don't have the guys around me, or this is going wrong, or just be legitimate with your answers is all I could ask, you know?
I don't know if you're talking about D'Angelo Russell and the Lakers, how D'Angelo Russell just came out and said, "We are better because Kobe's not here anymore."
That's real.
We're better.
Yeah. Those answers
I'm
are
a
better.
Lakers fan. I'm a Kobe fan, sorry, and I agree with that. So here's my point to this question, Christian, is being real, being genuine is sexy. And I think you look at Tony Romo and his press conference a couple days ago, I loved that he had a speech written. He put time into that thing. I'm sure his wife peer edited it. I think he wanted to say about 5 to 10 sentences that were vital that he needed to get off his chest, because the media can just rip you to shreds if you don't say exactly what should be said. I also love the fact that Earl Thomas and Rob Gronkowski tweeted at each other throughout the week. Earl Thomas said, "I have nothing but respect for Rob Gronkowski. He's one of the best I've lined up against." Talking about that hit that Gronkowski had, a punctured lung. Gronkowski tweets back at Earl and says, "Thanks so much, bro. Appreciate you. It was a clean football hit. I'll see you later down the road." I love that interaction. That's real. Mm-hmm. That's genuine. One of the things I love about Kobe Bryant that could be a fault for some people is the fact that he has no filter and he's so real. Whenever he's interviewed, everything he says is so genuine and so real. I love Tim Tebow to death. I love Russell Wilson to death. But there's times where I wish they would just kind of be as real as possible, because it's like, I want to know what's in your brain. All these people look up to you. They want to know what you're thinking. They don't want to hear "Go Hawks." They don't want to hear, "Oh, we play." They want to hear real stuff. Not that that's not real. Not that they don't mean those things, but they want to hear beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lacey, final point here.
Something that kind of bugs me is when family members of professional athletes are active on media. And I think what they don't realize, I mean, I don't know family dynamics, but some of the stuff these people are saying is actually hurting the reputation of their family member that they care for, when they think they're defending them and sticking up for them. But in the long run, it looks bad. One of the biggest examples I can think of is Steph Curry's wife after the championship game. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what she tweeted, because she deleted it shortly after she tweeted it, I think because she realized it was not something that was going to help Steph out in the long run.
Right.
But yeah, when family members get involved, I think that's a bad thing.
I would agree too.
She just called the NBA playoffs corrupt and rigged. That's all. No big deal.
No, not a big deal at all.
That's
right. All right.
Get us out of here, Christian.
Pretty fun. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the UW Huskies. We're going to figure out if they just shot themselves in the foot as far as their national championship hopes are concerned. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
My hockey career began like many players, on frozen ponds. That's why the groundbreaking partnership between the NHL and Constellation is so beneficial for the communities we play in and fans like you. Constellation and the NHL have a commitment to a clean energy future, so we join forces to offset the league's entire carbon footprint this season and work with NHL clubs to help reach their energy efficiency goals. I'm proud to be part of a league that's taking action to preserve the environment. Constellation, the NHL's preferred energy choice.
Welcome back, sports fans, to Mass Radio. Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loop Air Student Radio. If you want to call on the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332. In studio today, we have Lacey Nicholson. Where's number 44? Just beat our half athlete in horse the other day. Christian Bond, to my right, took the L, but he took it with class. He'll get better. He'll practice.
She got lucky.
Never mind. There goes the class.
Christian is a horse connoisseur.
Is he really?
I'm a horse legend. I'll beat you tomorrow, Kellen.
Kellen only has one shot, and it's because of the one player he watches, and it's the Kobe fadeaway. He shoots it every time he touches the ball, and it's impossible to stop if it goes in.
Wow, that means a lot. You've been watching film.
That's a good... I'm going to interrupt you, Kellen. It's a really good breakdown, Drew. It is impossible to stop if it goes in. That's very astute.
To my right with the sweat shorts, he looks like Russell Westbrook, is Drew Artisoni. Drew,
very
it's
nice.
Good to have you here today.
I wish I was as athletic as him, man. Make my life a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah.
I think you're more stylish than him, though, even though he is pretty stylish.
Thank you.
Maybe.
I appreciate that greatly.
So let's jump into it. It happened. The University of Washington Huskies lost to the USC Trojans last Saturday night. The Huskies didn't look anything like what they usually do. What was wrong with the team, Lacey?
Well, guys, I was actually at the game on Saturday.
Big baller.
I'm sorry.
Wait, you weren't at the Linfield game?
I wasn't at the Linfield game. I watched Linfield online, and I hustled over to the Dogs game. But fun game, tough loss, but guys... The UW offense was struggling. They did not look like the offense that they have been all year, and the stats definitely proved that. The Dogs only scored 13 points when they are averaging 44.8 points per game. That's a huge difference. They also gained 276 yards of offense when they're averaging 477 yards per game. So huge differences in the numbers there. But you have to give it to the USC defense. They had a heck of a game, and Jake Browning was pressured almost every possession, and it made it really tough for him to make some decisions there in the offense.
I'm going to piggyback off of that. Drew, your friend Jake Browning didn't look great at all. On one of their later drives in the game, he could barely stand on his own 2 feet. He tripped and then ended up kneeling in the end zone for a touchback or a safety. Ridiculous. What was wrong with him?
Well, Christian, unlike Lamar Jackson, I think Jake finally proved he's human.
Yeah.
He was on an absolute tear for a ton of games. He didn't look good. I thought he would possibly improve as the game went on, as he got to see more and more of that USC defense, and he just kind of got worse and worse. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the game, like you said, yeah, he couldn't even stay on his 2 feet. Did kind of the Jameis Winston from 2 years ago, where we saw the Randy Orton meme come out for a long time. Watch out, watch out, watch out. And
it wasn't as bad as the butt fumble, though.
It wasn't as bad as the butt fumble. Nothing will ever be as bad as a butt fumble. Mm. Throw it back to a tough deal from Kellen a bunch of years ago, just another terrible USC quarterback. It was tough to see Jake play the way he did, especially against USC. I would have loved to see him light up the Trojans. And back to the point again where I have to say, you know, where Drew is right, where Drew is wrong. Drew is definitely wrong about USC. I thought they were going to be terrible for the next 10 years because of their inabilities as a program. And, you know, I think USC may be on its way back up.
That's fair to say. So for as much as we talk about the UW offense, the defense has been just as good. Kellen, how did they give up 24 points last Saturday?
Well, the Huskies played zone. You know, UW gave up 400 yards of offense last week. Not the defense we are used to seeing. You know, statistically, you got to give USC a lot of credit. Donald's performance against Washington, in my opinion, was the best by a quarterback versus the Huskies all year. His 287 yards, 69.7% completion rating, 8.7 yards per attempt, and two touchdowns, and his quarterback rating was 150.63, worst season's high for a UW opponent. You know, you look beyond the stats, Darnold was even better than that. Negating the Washington pass rush with his legs and firing strikes to receivers at every level of the field, very, very impressive by a redshirt freshman. You look at the receiver position, the running back position, you know, Darius Rogers continues to occupy the role kind of the unsung hero of the USC's offense in 2016. But honestly, it probably was his best performance of the year against Washington. Mm-hmm. He's the senior wideout who led the Trojans with 6 catches for 84 yards. And in my opinion, the first USC touchdown of the night when he had about 4 to 6 big-time first downs that just killed the UW's defense. He also had a 17-yard reception on the first and goal from the 24. Besides Rogers and Darnold, Darnold also turned to a pair of other increasingly targets to unlock that UW defense. Tight end Daniel, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name, but he had a career high of 5 catches for 78 yards and a touchdown of his own. Is going to be a big time player. I think he'll be playing on Sundays. Again, once again showing off his impressive range. And also their slot receiver Deontay Burnett added 4 big catches for 67 yards. So like you said, Jake Browning was human. The UW defense was human last Saturday.
Yeah, several different players from USC were getting it done last Saturday night. Drew, I know that you had a problem with the lightness or, you know, how easy that UW non-conference schedule was. And I'm going to ask pretty much the whole group in here, was Saturday night's game a situation of the team not being in enough close games throughout the season, or did they just have a bad night? Did they play bad? Drew, what do you think?
I think that it's kind of both.
Yeah.
To start with, you can't schedule Rutgers in hope to be able to play with teams with programs, perennial great programs like USC, not because they have the great programs, but just because they have NFL caliber talent every single year. And if they can put a game together, they're going to beat you. If you're going to play Rutgers doesn't put that many guys in the league. You just have to understand that. And then, like I said, Jake had an off night. Defense had an off night. You know, both sides of the ball have an off night. Special teams can't make up for the 2/3 of the game. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of both sides.
Okay. Kellen, what do you think about it?
I think the fact that it's only a 4-team playoff in college football is really unfair. I believe it should be 8 teams.
No.
You don't think so? No. You think so, Drew? 8 teams?
I'm sold on the 8-team playoff.
Okay, because here's the thing. I feel like when you're in the top 4, you're just trying not to lose games. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to win games. That's why, in my opinion, it's so hard to beat Alabama, because you're just not trying to lose. You're trying to stay in that top 4, and I think UW found themselves just kind of trying to play conservative, while USC is playing like their life depended on it. They're trying to move up in the rankings, and so UW is sitting there kind of like, let's just get this game over with. It's one of those deals where they're just trying to protect their ranking, and USC came in like a bat out of Hades and was ready to play in the football game.
I mean, Christian, the reason we want to go to an 18 playoff is, do you understand currently in the position right now, both Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh, who are the two most, or probably two of the three best coaches in college football and most exciting coaches to watch, are both not going to be on TV in the college football playoff?
That's not the... Sorry, Lacey, to cut you off here, but...
It's fine.
The four-team playoff keeps the college football playoff special. There's a reason people don't like the NBA playoff. It's because half the league makes the playoffs. Yeah. If anyone can just make the playoffs, all of a sudden, being in the playoffs loses kind of the glory of what
I agree with that, but is four more teams that much of a difference, do you think?
Yes. Eight's a good number.
No. You got to have four. You got to have four, especially with how many bowl games there are.
Like, but if you lose one game, you're almost out of it. It's like if you have an off game.
It just
you are out of it.
It just increases how important every game is. Makes everything that much... It makes everything mean more.
And here's...
If we expand it to eight, then all of a sudden, oh my goodness, you know, we can get away with losing two games and still make it and still be on TV.
Which is still a heck of a record.
Which is still
it's still a great record, but what about those teams that don't lose or lose one game? Like, you have to keep it special.
And here's the deal, Christian, about that one game, is about losing one game. Because then it depends on who you lost that one game to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Why is Michigan four? They lost to Iowa.
Save this, because we're going to get to that in a minute here. Lacey, what did you think about the Huskies on Saturday? Did they not face tough enough opponents throughout the year? Or did they have a bad day?
Oh, you guys kind of already hit on it. I mean, like I said, I think their offense was not clicking. I think they had a bad day for sure. Defense, when Azeem Victor went down, tough one there. Does anyone know what ended up happening to him?
I don't have the injury report on him, but I know losing a player like him is a big deal for
big deal
team.
For the defense. Might have rattled them there. I think it was just an off night for the Dogs. But last week I talked about how I would love to see them face one of these top-notch teams in Alabama.
Victor is he underwent surgery for a leg fracture. Oh. So it's not as bad as we thought, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would have loved to see UW face one of these top teams like Alabama or Clemson, but USC brought it to them. And now, after watching that game, I don't know how the Dogs would face against one of the top teams.
Very good. That leads into our next topic. Luckily for UW, they were three of the top four teams lost last Saturday. They fell to number 6, I believe, in the rankings. Does the team still have a chance of making the college football playoff, or did they just ruin their playoff hopes?
Well, Clemson and Louisville, both coming out of the ACC, Louisville's lost to Clemson, and Clemson just fell to Pitt. So who's going to take that conference title? We don't know. That'll be a fun one. But regardless, I think both of those teams are worthy of the top four. Ohio State and Michigan are coming from the Big Ten, and they still have to play each other in conference, so one of them is going to drop out for sure there. Alabama's untouched. They're not going anywhere. At this point,
they could be the Browns at this point, I think.
Yeah.
At this point, the Dogs have a very slim chance of the playoff run, I think, and that's even assuming that they win out. They still got to face the Cougars, and that's not going to be an easy one.
Right. Kellen, what do you think?
I think, honestly, if the Huskies win out, I think they will make the playoffs.
Wow.
I really want WSU to beat Colorado, because I think it'll make the Huskies beating the Cougs in Pullman even better, even that much more impressive. And so I think the Huskies are still a great team. You watch that game. I watched it with my dad because we had recorded it. Obviously, we played against Linfield, and there was still a lot of momentum for the Huskies to come back in that football game. But like Drew mentioned, Jake Browning just did not play his greatest game, and he needed to against that defense. Yeah. But he underthrew a lot of receivers. They were open. You watch John Ross, you know, break Adoree Jackson's ankles at one point. Adoree Jackson posts on Twitter he can laugh at himself. It's one of those deals where if Browning hits his receivers when he needed to, that game, there's more light bulbs on UW's, you know, scoreboard than USC's, in my opinion.
Drew, what do you think? They in or out if they went out?
Completely out.
Yeah.
Completely out. There's no chance. Not a bat's chance in Hades.
That's fair. All right.
I mean, it's
Christian,
just,
what do you think?
I think that they are most likely out of this, out of the playoffs. I mean, the Pac-12 isn't getting enough credit for what it is. Some of that West Coast. And it's just part of the stuff we don't realize, because we're on the West Coast, a lot of people are asleep when this Husky team plays. Like, it's a thing. Like,
hence Christian McCaffrey being robbed from the Heisman.
It's 1 a.m. there. They don't get to see these people play. There's no credit given. Like you said, Kellen, the two teams in the top four lost to unranked opponent this weekend, but they stayed ahead of Washington in the rankings. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
USC was ranked.
Yep.
Well, doesn't make any sense that those teams are still ahead of Washington. Washington lost to a ranked team. Those two teams didn't.
It goes back to strength of schedule and to look ahead. If UW loses to Wazoo, like I think they just may, if UW uses the Wazoo in the Apple Cup, they're going to drop like LSU.
Well, that, yeah. If
they're going to drop like a rock.
If they, oh, if yeah, the Huskies they want a chance in the college football playoffs, they have to win out, and there's no answer for them losing
another
game.
It's just crazy to think that one loss to a ranked team and you, mm-hmm. you're still not. That's why I think there should be eight teams.
Gotta keep it special. Gotta keep it important. All right, let's move forward.
Eight teams.
The Dogs have Arizona State this weekend. What does everybody expect to see from the Huskies this weekend?
Well, there's four big key assets when it comes to football. Obviously, offense, defense, special teams, and coaching. So when you look at the offensive side of the ball, advantage Washington. You know, don't expect Browning to have that bad of a game this time around. I believe he's going to try to boost his Heisman numbers back up. He's one of the best quarterbacks in college football and is going against the nation's worst pass defense. When it comes to defense, advantage Washington. The Huskies still held USC to only 26 points. This edge goes to UW, and it's not even questionable. Even though Azeem Victor is out for the rest of the season with a broken leg, look for other guys to be the next man up and fill that void. Special teams actually goes to Arizona State. Zane Gonzalez is the best college kicker in college football. Coaching, no question. Coach Peterson had his team in contention for the college football playoff. In my opinion, still does. Obviously, if they lose, they could be back in the hunt, assuming the Huskies win the Pac-12 title. In my opinion, what is this big matchup is the receivers. Washington receivers versus ASU defense. Browning, did not have the best game last weekend, but he still has plenty of weapons around him. Ross and Pettis are capable of going off at any given moment. 4-3 speed, unbelievable, to Browning's ability to throw them, open and launch the ball down the field. Look for Browning's timing to be a lot more comfortable in this game. The Sun Devils need to keep safety help over the top against these receivers. These guys run unbelievable routes. They stem these routes. They don't even have to make hard breaks because they're so fast in and out of their cuts. In my opinion, this won't even be close. ASU won't be able to generate enough offense to keep pace up with UW. Again, Browning will look to have a big bounce-back game. I think he'll throw for about 300 yards, 3 to 4 touchdowns. He'll hook up with Ross. He'll hook up with Pettis. Gaskin won't break the 100-yard mark on the ground, but I believe he'll have about 85 to 95 yards, at least hit the zone once or twice. The Huskies will pick up their 10th win, and they'll get ready for the Apple Cup. I believe it's going to be about 45 to 21.
Man,
Huskies
loaded. Kellen Westring with the breakdown. Yeah. Lacey, what do you think? What do you expect to see this
Kellen
weekend?
Kellen took all my points. No.
Get on the dock.
UW's defense did well last weekend against USC, who is a very well-organized offense. But sad to see Azeem Victor is going to be out for the rest of the season. But I'm hoping that that's something that can rally this defense and really get them motivated for this weekend. ASU offense is going to have a tough time, I think, getting on the board this weekend. Mm. The Sun Devils QB, Manny Wilkins, has thrown as many touchdowns as he has interceptions this season, with 7 on both sides. The team is averaging 34.7 points per game. The Dogs are only allowing 17.9. I think the Dogs are going to be able to stop this offense easily. ASU defense allows 37.8 points against them per game, which is a lot of points. And I think the Dogs are going to blow that number out even more. I think Jake Browning is going to get his confidence back and find those talented receivers, like Kellen pointed out. And this is the last game for the Huskies, the last home game for the Huskies. I'm hoping they can have fun with it and just gain that confidence before facing the Cougars in Pullman.
Very nice, very nice. Drew, what do you think? What do you think we should see from the Huskies?
I think the Huskies are going to win handily. Defense is going to have their mojo back, especially with ASU's quarterback hurt.
Yep.
That's the one thing to take note of here in this. Manny Wilkins is out. He's been the ASU. He's been the motor to drive that ASU offense. They came out with what they call the Sparky formation. Saw a little bit of the Wildcat revival in their game versus Wazoo, which was kind of cool to see. So I don't know if UW is going to be preparing for that. Just another thing to see on film, another wrinkle. I think UW will handle them, though. And Jake Browning's come back with a vengeance.
I think that's fair to say.
Want to give a special shout-out to Jeff Mitsui, to Kara's father. He's listening. And his little advice on this topic is, if the Dogs wins in three straight games here, with beating the Devils, with beating the Cougs, and with winning the Pac-12 Championship, they will be in. We appreciate the information, Jeff. So, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will visit our special segment, The Seahawks Will. It'll be underway. Find out what we think they will do next. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
Don't worry, 74 people were picked before me in the NFL draft.
To fight childhood obesity, United Way and the NFL are helping kids play at least 60 minutes a day.
Okay, time for the team obstacle course. Yay!
What this place needs is more healthy kids. To get involved or donate, go to unitedway.org/play60.
Now I get it.
Welcome back, folks, to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. If you want to call on the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332. To my right, we have Drew Artisoni, who was first team all intramural quarterback this fall. Pretty exciting stuff. To my center is the Christian Bond, the real Christian Bond, one of the best umpires in the Northwest. And to my left, Lacey Nicholson, who I think grabbed second team All-American snack food, bringing to class. We're glad to have her here today. Thanks, folks, for listening as well.
All right, let's jump right into it. Seattle Seahawks pulled off the win last Sunday in New England. With the travel and with the short week of practice, a lot of people wrote the Seahawks off. They won 31-24 over a really good New England Patriots team. Lacey, how good was that goal line stance at the end of the game?
Real quick, do you guys remember the scores we guessed at the end?
Did you nail it?
I don't know. I feel like that score is looking really familiar.
Check the podcast.
If I nailed
ladies
it,
ladies and gents,
I should get
when this podcast is over, though. All right, Lacey, that goal line stance, though. How about it?
Oh, my goodness, you guys. So the announcer said, do these teams have to end every game on the goal line when they play each other? And I loved that because it's so exciting to watch. Luckily, it was in the Hawks' favor this time. And yes, Christian, the defense was incredible. The Patriots, at the end of the game there, they have four chances to get in the end zone. They give the ball to their running back, LeGarrette Blount, to get the touchdown, and the Hawks don't allow that. They give the ball to Brady for a shot. Hawks don't allow it. And finally, they look for their massive tight end in Gronkowski, and no go there. Hawks are holding them. And loved having Cam Chancellor back for the Hawks. His first game back after being out for the last four games. Everyone knew that last attempt for the Patriots to score was going to Gronkowski, and Chancellor is not letting it happen. So just super fun to watch this defense grit down and get the job done.
All right, that leads me. Kellen, you are now a former wide receiver.
Why did you just say things
there
like that?
There was a lot of contact on that fourth down play from the 1 yard line. What did you think about the play?
I love good football. One of the Hawks to win. I am so glad they did not throw a flag there. If that play happens in the first quarter, I think they throw a flag, but they throw it on Gronk. If you watch the play, Gronk slips in to Cam Chancellor. Cam does a great job of keeping that slant option closed and keeping the fade option to his advantage. Gronk kind of tries a swim move and leans into Cam Chancellor. And it's so awesome because Belichick, Gronk, and Brady all look for the flag, but they weren't PO'd. They weren't very upset that they didn't call the flag. And that shows that they know deep down it was a great no call. I am so glad the refs did not throw a flag there.
Drew, what do you think about the game? What are your takeaways from it?
I think the Seahawks proved how good they really can be by beating the best coach of our era and Tom Brady at home. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge win for the Hawks. I think it's a big momentum win. You always see the Hawks pick up after week 8 and decide they're going to be the Seahawks of old. I think they finally did that. Russell Wilson still looks a little injured, but the kid spun the ball, and he had a fantastic game.
Yep, yep.
He threw some unbelievable throws.
Spun it.
Just
spun the ball.
But still to Tom Brady. His throws to Edelman on those kind of quick fades or wheel routes were unbelievable. Best two quarterbacks in the league, in my opinion, Christian.
Could be. C.J. Procise got the start at running back last Sunday for the Seahawks. You know, based off of his performance, should we expect to see more from him now from the Seahawks?
Oh, he had a game on Sunday. 17 carries for 66 yards and 7 catches for 87 yards. He's a rookie coming from Notre Dame where he played wide receiver there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely hope to see more of him this season. He's a dual threat on the field and for this offense. The Seahawks made the decision to cut Christine Michael on Tuesday of this week. Pete Carroll said the release was really about the guys coming into the position, and we can assume he's talking about C.J. Procise as well as Thomas Rawls, who's expected to play this Sunday after being out for nearly 2 months due to a hairline fracture. So it'll be exciting to have him back on the field as well.
Yes, very exciting for the Seahawks. Doug Baldwin had a monster game for the Seahawks last Sunday against the Patriots. Kellen, what was working for him?
So Doug Baldwin, again, isn't the biggest guy out there. He's not Julio Jones. But what Doug Baldwin does so well is he gets off jams. If you watch that game, there's a linebacker normally in front of him, which is kind of what Linfield did to myself, which is where they star you. But he was about 5 yards off of him. And what I did against Linfield is I didn't even see the star. So I did not see the guy that was right in front of me. I run full speed, and that guy just rocks my world. What Doug Baldwin did a lot better than I did, which is why he's an all-pro, is he sees that pre-snap and does a quick shake off of the one guy and then jukes the safety and still gets the ball in the end zone. Again, credit to Russell Wilson for getting him the football, but Doug Baldwin's route running is so pristine, and that is why, in my opinion, he's a top 10 NFL wide receiver. I would have never said that a couple years ago. It's so cool to see how far he's come.
Yep, 6 catches, 59 yards, 3 touchdowns for Doug Baldwin. Really, really a big day for the Seahawks. So, Drew, I want to ask you, are Steven Hauschka's efforts being overlooked?
We talked about this, 2 weeks ago, about the difference between how Bruce Arians treated his kicker, how the Vikings treat their kicker, and now how Pete Carroll treats his kicker.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Hauschka is one of the top kickers in the league, and I think, yeah, he is a bit overlooked because of the powerhouse Seahawk defense and the way Pete Carroll does things and the way the Hawks go about doing things. It's such a high-intensity, high-impact team that the finesse players like Hauschka don't really get a lot of shine. But I think Hauschka is one of the most consistent field goal kickers, one of the most reliable guys in the league right now, and I don't think he gets enough credit for it some days.
Yeah, he added 13 points last weekend for the Seahawks, so you know, without his 4 field goals, the Seahawks lose the football game. So good job there by Steven Hauschka. All right, let's look forward. The Hawks play the Eagles this weekend. What's going to happen?
So the game is played in Seattle at CenturyLink Field. I'd like to think the 12th man has an effect in every game, but I'm not sure. I'd like to see some statistics on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do think they're going to affect this game. And rookie quarterback Carson Wentz, I'm hoping 12th man can rattle a few interceptions out of him there. Mm-hmm. He has thrown 9 touchdowns this season with 5 interceptions. The Hawks are going to have to be aware of running back Ryan Matthews. He's only averaging 4.2 yards per carry, but has 7 touchdowns on the season, so he's definitely a threat in this offense. I'm not too worried about the Hawks' offense after watching the game on Sunday. If they can pull out an effort like they did on Sunday, they're going to be just fine. Wilson's looking great. Doug Baldwin, obviously we mentioned the hat trick there in this last weekend. Can't get enough of Jimmy Graham. I've talked about him quite a bit. And we already hit on C.J. Procise. And now we have Thomas Rawls back in the offense. So I think the Hawks are going to come away with a win.
Very nice. Very nice. Drew, what do you think is going to happen this Sunday?
I think Carson Wentz had a great start to the year. I think his performance has been kind of on a decline and then the plateau in the last few weeks. I think it's really tough as a rookie quarterback to step into CenturyLink. Why don't you just ask Colin Kaepernick how he felt about that first ordeal? And
your favorite.
Yeah, my favorite player in the entire world. Not. And he, I just, I think the Hawks are just going to roll. Just roll the Eagles. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to get ugly. I think it's going to be a good confidence win for the Hawks, too.
Yep.
They need a big win. They need Russell Wilson to sit back there and be comfortable. I don't think Philly's secondary is that good. I think Russell's going to be able to have his way with them. The Hawks need a run game, though. They need a run game if they want Russell Wilson to throw the ball. It's tough for Russell Wilson to be able to run and throw and have to be both parts of that offense. Yeah.
Kellen, what do you got happening this weekend?
So I think even though Philadelphia has been stronger at home this year, the team has not lost a road game by more than 7 points. Three of the four losses, the road losses for the Eagles, have come against divisional opponents, while the other loss was versus an NFC North foe. This will definitely be a tough game at Seattle for rookie quarterback Carson Wentz and their first-year head coach in Doug Peterson, but both of them have shown a lot of poise this season, and it should not be rattled by the big-time crowd in Seattle. I think this is an intriguing matchup because, in my opinion, nobody knows what to expect from the Eagles here. They're very hot and cold. They surprised doubters last week with winning 24-15 over the Atlanta Falcons, who the Seahawks had their hands full against the Falcons a couple weeks ago. And they also knocked off Minnesota 21-10. I know Minnesota is kind of becoming realistic now, but still a great win. Philly obviously is not the favorite here and will struggle to score against a highly motivated Seattle defense that has a ton of confidence right now after upsetting New England in Foxborough. Look for the Hawks to win this one by double digits again. Hawks 35, Eagles 21.
Yep, I agree with all that. I think the Seahawks are going to win this weekend. Offense is too good right now. I mean, with Rawls coming back, I think it's a good boost. CJ Procise helped out the Seahawks offense tremendously. Drew, you mentioned it. Having that run game is extremely beneficial to Russell Wilson and the wide receivers and all that good stuff. So I'm going to take the Seahawks this weekend too. All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we got to talk a little bit about what's going on in the POU community revolving EMAL. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
My hair is kind of different.
Not everyone likes the way I dress. And I don't look like other people.
Me neither. Everyone is different, but no one deserves to be bullied. So be kind, stay positive, and support each other.
Every single day.
Welcome back to Mast Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. If you want to call into the show and share your opinion about what's going on with EMAL right now, you can do it at 253-535-7332. Once again, that's 253-535-7332. Joined by a member of the POU football team, his name is Kellen Westring. Also joined by a member of the POU women's basketball team, her name is Lacey Nicholson. And rounding out the starting 3.5, he is a point forward for the POU men's basketball team. His name is Gerard Assoni. So we've kind of been dancing around this subject. It's touchy, especially for some of the people in this room. The Mast came out with a great, great, great article about what's going on right now in the POU community regarding the acronym EMAL. That, for those of you that don't know,
EMAL. That was quick.
All right, Kellen, can you fill us in on what EMAL is, please?
Kellen, may I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Matt, I feel like it's kind of unfair to ask you this question. I feel like Kellen's in a really difficult situation here. One, because it's about his grandfather's legacy and it's about his father's legacy, and I feel like it's really unfair to ask Kellen any of these questions. So, Kel, you can excuse yourself if you want because you're in a really rough position.
Thanks.
However, EMAL stands for Every Man a Loot. Every Man a Loot is an acronym used by the football team to kind of describe their servant warrior, you know, citizenship status, I guess I should say. Let's call it that. The way they act on and off the field. It is the heart of their program. It is fantastic. And I think it's a great culture. I believe it's POU football first, but you can be EMAL. It's a thing. It's about their culture. It's how things are supposed to be.
Joining us right now on the phone is Dan Smith. He's a parent of one of our POU football players. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing all right.
Hey, Dan. Good to hear your voice.
What are your thoughts on what's going on right now with the whole Emol situation?
You're asking me what I haven't been listening to the show. I haven't been listening to the show. And all I know is kind of what I've heard around the program. And I'm in 100% support of keeping Emol as is.
Yeah.
That's basically. I called today to basically offer a huge congratulations to all the fall athletes,
mm-hmm.
and quite specifically the football team and the women's soccer team, because those are the two teams that I follow closely. I thought that they conducted themselves very admirably last week at Linfield, and the soccer team. I know they competed; they had an incredible season. So, you know, I probably jumped in on a last-minute deal. You guys were discussing something else. I am in 100% favor of keeping Emol as is. I think it's an incredibly positive thing for the entire university, for the alumni, and the athletes and non-athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my feelings about it.
Mm-hmm.
I came in. As a parent, I sent my son to PLU with huge expectations, not only athletically, but just building character and maturing. And those expectations were exceeded significantly. So I attribute that to the coaching staff, the football coaching staff, mm-hmm. there at Pacific Lutheran.
Yep. All right, we appreciate the call, Dan. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Have a good rest of your day.
Congratulations, Kellen, on your all.
So before Mr. Smith.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan.
So before kind of I was answering the phone. Did you guys talk about the other side of what's going on?
Yeah, so basically, I kind of explained like the legacy, and I feel it's very unfair to ask Kellen to answer any question on this matter just because of the position he has on it. I just feel like, you know, you should probably direct questions me, you, and Lacey just because we're on the outside of the issue, and I feel like it's an outsider's opinion, but it's... It's an inclusive language issue. Speaking, the Emol stands for every man a loot,
mm-hmm.
and they believe the man portion of that is exclusionary, because technically we're all loots here.
Yes, the exclusivity of the language is what's being questioned. You know, Thomas Kreis, our president here at POU, I'm going to read his quote right quick. Let's see. He said, "It's hard to carry out our mission statement if we are not deliberately trying to include everybody." If you want to read more about this story, you should check it out on mastmedia.pou.edu. Really a great informative piece done by the Mast Media staff, and you can learn all you need to know about what's going on here at POU.
I think the quote of the day, just got a text from Jeff Mitsui, going back to the college football playoff debate. He says, "The difference between number 9 and number 8 is too small, and the difference between number 8 and number 4 is too big. And so 6 teams doesn't work." So he is on your side, Christian. And honestly, after reading that, that does make a lot of sense. So thank you, Jeff, for that information.
Yeah. So we're going to get out of here. We had a great show today. I think that we're talking about something, maybe Tuesday, a little short one-hour show to preview the Apple Cup, talk a little Seahawks, talk a little men's and women's basketball right before Thanksgiving break. We might do it. We might not. So definitely check us out on social media. We'll be letting you know if we're going to do something or if we're not going to do something. So today has been great. Tune into Laser all weekend long to hear great shows. We got the Terrence Take podcast. We have, you know, the Radio Hour. We have tons of music-oriented shows on the station. So truly check it out. December 3rd, I believe, Laser is sponsoring an event down in the cave at POU. So if you're around campus, you should go check it out. We got a couple bands playing at that show. It should be a fun night for everyone. So for Kellen Westring, Lacey Nicholson, and Drew Artisoni, my name is Christian Bond. We're out of here. See ya.